Let's talk now about motivating yourself to peak performance. You know that the average person works at less than 50% of capacity. That means by motivating yourself, you can get far more out of yourself and far more out of your life. And motivation is very much like mental health. Physical health requires that you do physical exercises. Mental health, personal motivation, requires that you do mental exercises as well. The rule is that you have the potential right now to be more, do more, and have more than ever before. No matter what you've accomplished so far in life, it's really only a small part of what is really possible for you. In future orientation, one of the qualities of superior people that we have found is that superior people believe that the future is going to be better than the past. They believe that the future is going to be the greatest time of life. They believe that their highest income days lie ahead of them, that their greatest achievements are still to come. They believe that their happiest and most loving moments are still in the future. They have a "I can hardly wait" kids' first Christmas attitude toward life, and because of the law of expectations, surprise, surprise, their lives get better and better and better. The average person uses only 10% or less of his or her mental potential. This means that by unlocking more of your existing talents and abilities, you could achieve double, triple, and even 5 or 10 times what you're achieving today. So start by imagining that you could double your income in the next year or two. How much would that be? Just twice as much. Write it down as a goal and begin thinking about that number every day. You'll almost immediately start getting ideas and opportunities to double your income. Here's a second exercise. Imagine increasing your income by 10 times. Just add a zero to your current income to get that number. Now, here's what I've discovered over the years. If you say that I'm earning $50,000 a year today, and so my income is 10 times, that's 500,000, 10, your mind, like a body, will reject a new organ. Your mind will reject the idea, kick it back out. They say, absolutely not. It's impossible because your brain cannot take such an incredible change. So what you do is you push it back in again and you say, well, just imagine I could earn $500,000. It'll kick it out again. But just keep saying X to 10X. X is my current income, $50,000. 10X is $500,000. X to 10X. And as you keep thinking that, 50 to 500, 50 to 500, eventually your brain starts to get tired and stops kicking it out. And at a certain point, it'll say, oh, all right, maybe it's possible. And then your superconscious mind clicks in and says, well, maybe if you just did this, maybe that would help a little bit. And then the dam starts to break and you start to get all kinds of ideas that increase your income from 50 to 55 and 55 to 60 and 60 to 70. And things begin to happen, but they happen slowly. So don't expect lightning flash to take place and suddenly it will be accomplished. Expect it to happen incrementally as you get your mind around the idea of earning double or triple or 10 times what you're earning today. Now, here's a good question. Are these numbers possible? Of course they're possible. There's lots of people, thousands, millions of people already earning these amounts. And they all started out earning less than you are earning today. And you know something? Nobody's smarter than you. Nobody's better than you. They're just doing different things in a different way. I've been astonished, and I've been very successful in my life, to meet average people doing stuff in an above-average way who are earning 5 and 10 times as much as me. I just shake my head. I say, how can that be possible? And then I look at what they're doing is they're doing something different in a different field. They know more about what they're doing than I do, and they're concentrating on the one thing that they know. I've met people, I hate to say it, whose IQs didn't reach room temperature who are earning more money than me. Why? It's because they don't try to be good at a whole bunch of things. They just try to be really, really good at one thing and do it over and over again. So is it possible? Of course it is. As we said, the greatest discovery in history is that you become what you think about most of the time. So the key to high levels of self-esteem, self-respect, and self-confidence is to think about yourself in positive terms most of the time. You also become what you say to yourself most of the time. Your self-talk, your inner dialogue, determines 95% of your emotions. Now, here's an important fact. If you don't consciously and deliberately talk to yourself in a positive way, you default automatically to negative thinking. You think about your worries and your problems and the people you're mad at and the situations you're angry about and so on. If you're not careful, you go on to the automatic default setting of stinking thinking. You have to really make an effort to keep your mind on what you want and how to get it, on positive things for an extended period of time. But if you do something over and over again, what do you eventually develop? You eventually develop a habit. And pretty soon you develop the habit of always thinking positively and constructively about yourself and your life. So every day, talk to yourself positively by saying the words, I like myself, or I can do it, or I'm the best. Or as W. Clement Stone used to teach, say the words, I feel happy, I feel healthy, I feel terrific. Wonderfully enough, if you keep repeating these words, because your conscious mind can only hold one thought at a time, if you keep repeating these words, they start to become your reality. You start to reprogram yourself internally with a new mental equivalent. An important key to self-motivation and self-confidence is for you to cancel out negative thoughts and feelings. You know, nature abhors a vacuum. So if you eliminate negative thoughts and feelings from your mind, you create a mental vacuum and nature fills it with positive thoughts and feelings. Now, there are two main fears that trigger the negative emotions that hold you back. Number one is the fear of failure. This is the biggest single obstacle to success in adult life. It's the fear of loss, loss of money, loss of time, loss of love. It's the fear of poverty. And we all have this fear, usually going back to early childhood. The second major fear that people have is the fear of rejection. This is the fear of criticism or embarrassment or ridicule or the opinions of others. Do you know that 54% of adults fear public speaking more than they fear death? And do you know why? Because they're afraid of embarrassment. They're afraid that if they stand up and speak, people will laugh at them. And they'd rather die than stand up and speak. So these fears are very, very big fears, and they have an enormous impact on our lives. Both of these fears are learned in childhood as the result of destructive criticism from one or both parents. But because they are learned, they can be unlearned. And this is the miracle of modern psychology. They can be unlearned by using the law of substitution. And the law of substitution says your mind can only hold one thought at a time, positive or negative. And you can deliberately substitute a positive thought for a negative thought. Many people have come up and told me that this changed their lives. They didn't realize they had so much control over their life. They didn't realize that they could choose to replace a negative thought with a positive thought and do it over and over again until the positive thought locked in or set like concrete. Now, both the fear of failure and the fear of rejection can be canceled by saying the words, I like myself. Because the more you like yourself, the less you fear failure. And the more you like yourself, the less you fear rejection and criticism and the comments of other people. As your self-esteem goes up, your fears go down. In addition, you can cancel the fear of failure in particular by repeating the words, I can do it, over and over. I can do it. I can do it. You see, the fear of failure is summarized in the feeling, I can't. I can't. I can't. What about this? I can't. I can't. It holds us back from trying something new. It holds us back from taking risks. But whenever you have this fear of cold calling, this fear of knocking on doors, this fear of taking a chance, say to yourself over and over again, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. And as you say this, your confidence goes up and your fears go down. Now, here's an interesting discovery. It's called the boomerang effect in psychology. Everything you do or say that makes another person feel better about themselves causes you to feel better about yourself as well. So if you have people in your family or your social circle who you want to influence in a positive way, always tell them, you can do it. You can do it. You can do that. You can do that. Encourage people. Don't tell them all the reasons why it won't work. There's lots of people in life that will do that. Instead, always encourage people by telling them that they can do it. Sometimes you can change a person's entire life by putting courage into them, encourage, putting courage into them by telling them you can do it. And they'll come out later and they'll say, you know, I was really unsure. I was really insecure. But when you told me I could do it, I said, well, what the heck? And it changed my whole life. And as you encourage others and raise their courage, you feel better and more confident yourself. So one hand washes the other. Now, the most important quality for self-esteem and self-motivation is optimism. The top 10% in any field are optimists. They believe in themselves, and they see everything that happens as an opportunity of some kind. Every setback, every difficulty, every challenge, they see it as an opportunity. So optimism, we say, is like mental fitness. It's the measure of mental health and of a positive personality. If you want to be physically fit, as I said, you go to the gym, you work out, and you become physically strong. You do cross-training, upper body, lower body, and so on. If you want to become mentally fit, you do mental cross-training. So here are the four keys to optimism, the four keys to mental cross-training. Number one, think and talk about what you want and how to get it most of the time. Think and talk about what you want and how to get it most of the time. Because whatever you think and talk about, you're going to draw into your life. And you must be very careful. When my wife Barbara and I are talking, sometimes we'll be talking about something went wrong at the office or in work or investments. We'll be grumbling away at it. And Barbara will say, hey, wait a minute, do we want more of this in our life? And I'll say, no, then we stop talking about it. Now, here's an interesting way. It's called a pattern interrupt, to stop talking about something that is turning over in your mind. Just say the word stop. Very, very hard. Stop. Stop. And what that does is it gives you like a face slap, and it actually stops the thinking pattern and then immediately replace it by thinking about your goals. One of the most wonderful ways to keep yourself optimistic is to think about your goals. Whenever you're cut off in traffic, think about your goals. Whenever you're worried about something, think about your goals. Whenever you have a problem, think about your goals. And as you go through your daily life, think and talk about what you want and how to get it. And as you do that, you become more and more positive and optimistic. The second key to optimism is to look for the good in every situation. Whenever something goes wrong, whenever you have a problem, immediately stop and say, well, that's good. And then go into it and find out what is good. When you look for something good in every situation or difficulty, surprise, surprise, you always find something good. Now, here's a question I sometimes ask people. I say, does anybody here have a dimmer switch on a light at home? And everybody raises their hand. I say, well, that's good. I said, now, a dimmer switch is an interesting metaphor for optimism, for success. With your dimmer switch, you manually control it with your fingers, and you either turn it up or down. If you turn your dimmer switch up, your lights will be bright. If you turn it down, your lights will be low. You also have a dimmer switch on your brain. And this dimmer switch on your brain is controlled by the thoughts you think. And when your mental dimmer switch is up, you're positive, you're creative, you're happy, you have high energy, you have a great sense of humor. You're the best person you can possibly be. When your dimmer switch is on low, you're negative, you're angry, you're worried, you're fearful, and so on. So your job is to keep your dimmer switch on full most of the time. Now, how do you do that? Well, whenever you think and talk about what you want, your dimmer switch goes on full, and you become positive and creative. Whenever you look for the good in a situation, you always find something good, and your dimmer switch goes on full, and you become creative and positive. Now, the third way to be an optimist, and this has been validated in 100 years of study of successful people, is seek the valuable lesson in every problem. What successful people realize is that every problem, difficulty, setback, or obstacle contains a valuable lesson that can help them to be even more successful in the future. My friend Norman Vincent Peale once said, when God wants to send you a gift, he wraps it up in a problem. And the bigger the gift that God wants to send you, the bigger the problem he wraps it up in. Now, you may feel like it's Christmas morning around your house with lots of gifts all over the place, but the fact is that every problem or difficulty that you have contains a gift of some kind. Now, I want you to imagine that there's a great power in the universe that wants you to be successful and happy in the future. And this great power in the universe knows that you have a perverse nature. What does this mean? It means you will not learn the lessons you need to learn to be successful until it hurts. And so therefore, this great power in the universe sends you lessons on a regular basis, and each lesson is accompanied by pain of some kind. It could be physical pain, it could be financial pain, could be emotional pain, but it's always accompanied with pain. And the pain is to get your attention. And so whenever you are experiencing anything in your life that is causing you pain, anxiety, unhappiness, upset, distress, and so on, ask yourself, what is the lesson contained in this situation? What am I meant to learn here? And if you look into it, you will always find one or more lessons. They say great souls are those who learn great lessons from small events. Some people have to be beaten over the head several times before they learn the lesson. Other people, when they experience a pain, say, lesson coming down the pike, I wonder what it is. And wonderfully enough, as you look for the lesson, your dimmer switch goes on full and you become a positive person. And when you look for a lesson in every or any problem that you have, you will always find something. And sometimes the lesson can be what makes you successful in life. Many times in life, you will look back and say, thank heavens that difficulty happened earlier because it taught me that lesson which enabled me to be successful and happy in this situation today. So always take the high road and look for the lesson. Now, remember the boomerang situation. If you want to be an influence in the lives of other people, help other people look for the good when things are going wrong in their lives. When somebody's having a problem, say, well, you know, there's something good in everything that happens. I wonder what it could be here, and help them focus their mind on finding something good. When a person has a reversal or a setback, say, well, you know, there's one or more lessons in every problem. I wonder what it could be here, and help them identify the lessons. And in both cases, you help those people get back in touch with reality, put their dimmer switches on full, become positive and creative, and elicit all the benefits contained in those setbacks and difficulties. And simultaneously, you make yourself a more positive and constructive person. And the fourth way to become an optimist is to feed your mind with positive material. Remember, when you constantly feed your mind with positive, uplifting material, books, tapes, courses, CDs, positive conversations with other people, attending seminars and conferences given by people who are positive and constructive, this has an inordinate influence on your mind, makes you more positive, gives you more energy, makes you happier, motivates you to do more things, as opposed to sitting and watching all the terrible things that are on television or in the newspapers. Now, there's a simple antidote to dealing with fear, doubt, and worry, and to becoming more optimistic. We find that all negativity ultimately comes down to blame. You can only be negative about a situation if you are blaming someone else. You can only be angry if you're blaming someone else. You can only be resentful if you're blaming someone else. When you stop blaming, all your negative emotions stop at the same time. And the way you can cancel negative emotions is by saying the words, I am responsible, over and over again. Whenever you say the words, I am responsible, you cancel the negative emotion, because you cannot accept responsibility and be negative simultaneously. The words, I am responsible, are so powerful. I spent 4,000 hours and 3 years of study in this area of psychology because I was so overwhelmed with the importance of this. All of happiness and success in life comes from positive emotions. In the absence of positive emotions, negative emotions emerge automatically. And you can cancel negative emotions by just saying, I am responsible. I'm not going to be mad at someone else, blame someone else. I am not a victim. Things went wrong. I'm not going to complain and criticize and whine and moan. No, I am responsible. And when you say the words, I am responsible, you feel like a power in your own life. You take control over what's happening to you. Your mind goes calm and you have clear ideas on what to do next. All leaders are highly self-responsible people. Every book on success, whether it's Jack Canfield's book, The Success Principles, or Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits, all begin with take charge, take responsibility, stop making excuses, decide what you want and go for it. So responsibility is the dividing line between childhood and adulthood. When you're a child, you blame your problems on your parents, what they did or didn't do. But when you become an adult, as the Bible says, I put aside childish things. When you become an adult, you step across that line and you say, I am an adult. I am responsible for what happens to me from now on. And from then on, your life will be different. Now, if you love and respect the people around you, encourage them to accept responsibility as well. In my company, I say, everybody here is the president of their own personal services corporation. You are responsible. So if something goes wrong, you're responsible to solve it. So people come into my office and they say, well, I've got a problem, but I'm the president of my own company and here's what I propose we do. With my children, I tell them the same thing. Always accept responsibility. So they come in and something's gone wrong and I say, what's up? And they say, well, I have this problem, I have this difficulty, but I am responsible and this is what I've learned. And so my children from an early age are self-responsibility accepting, lesson learning young people. And as they get older and older, their confidence goes up, their self-esteem goes up. They know they can handle any situation because they take responsibility and look for the lesson. And so can you. Now, negative emotions make you feel bad and see yourself as a victim. Accepting responsibility makes you feel powerful and in control of yourself and your life. Here's another breakthrough for me, which is why I spent so many hours and so many years studying this, is there's a direct relationship between accepting responsibility and a sense of control. And there's a direct relationship between having a sense of control and positive emotions. Remember, you feel great about yourself to the degree to which you feel you're in control of your life. And when you accept responsibility, you take complete control. And when you take complete control, you feel happy. The two most powerful confidence-building statements that you can say from now on are, I like myself and I am responsible. I like myself and I am responsible. Now, positive affirmations, positive statements that you make to yourself with emotion, are the way that you take complete control over your emotions and program yourself for success in the future. Positive affirmations enable you to unlock your potential at a higher level than you ever thought. And the positive affirmations that we've talked about, I like myself, I am responsible, I can do it. Every morning when you get up, get yourself going by saying, I love my work, I love my work. Sometimes we say that often when you get up in the morning, you will not say, good morning, God, you'll say, good God, it's morning. But you can get yourself up and get yourself cranked by immediately starting to say, I like myself, I love my work, I like myself. I love my work, like the choo-choo train. I think I can. I love myself. I like my work. I love myself. I like my work. And pretty soon, you're starting to feel good. You feel happy. Your brain releases endorphins, which are called nature's happy drug. Your liver releases glycogen, which is a form of energy, and you feel pumped and ready to go. Now, there's five ways to build greater optimism, self-confidence, and a positive mental attitude. Number one, create an exciting vision of your ideal future, as if you had no limitations. Just the very act of thinking about an exciting future actually raises your self-esteem and improves your self-image. It actually motivates you and makes you happy. Just imagining a wonderful life. Imagine yourself, visualize yourself earning twice as much as you're earning today. Then visualize yourself earning three times as much, five times as much, 10 times as much. Visualize, idealize yourself living a wonderful life in every area. One of the things that are very important is to get magazines that wealthy people read, like The Robb Report, like Architectural Digest, homes, pictures, yachts, planes, beautiful watches, clothes, resorts. And just read those magazines and say, I can do this. I'm going to do that. I can do this. And just put yourself into the picture. Imagine you could live in a house like this. You could enjoy vacations like this. You could take yacht cruises like this. You could wear clothes like that. And the more you flood your mind with these pictures, the more your superconscious mind goes to work to find ways to make it a reality. A second way to have a positive mental attitude is to create written goals and plans for your future and work on them every day. As you feel yourself moving forward, as Earl Nightingale said, happiness is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. When you feel yourself moving forward towards something that's important to you, you feel happy, you feel powerful, you feel in control of your life. So it's not the reaching the destination, it's that forward motion that gives you that feeling of positive motivation. Write down your goals by using what we call the three P's. The three P's are, first of all, the present tense. Write down your goal as an affirmation, as if the goal has already been achieved. For example, you would say, I earn X number of dollars each year. I weigh X number of pounds as my permanent weight. Say it as though it's already a fact, which sets up a dynamic within your subconscious and superconscious minds that starts them working 24 hours a day to make your new command your reality. Use the positive tense. Always state your goals in positive terms to activate your subconscious mind. Your mind cannot accept a negative command. It cannot accept lose weight. But instead of saying, I will lose weight, you say, I weigh X number of pounds. Instead of saying, I will quit smoking, you say, I am a non-smoker. So your subconscious mind cannot deal with any other tense but the present. And finally, use the personal tense. Use the word I plus an action verb. As we say, you are the only person in the universe who can use the word I with regard to yourself. And whenever you use the word I, your subconscious mind recognizes this as a command coming from head office. I earn, I sell, I achieve, I run, I accomplish. Whenever you use I plus an action verb, it has a powerful impact on changing your behavior. Another way to make your goals work for you is to write and rewrite them every morning in the PPP tense, positive personal present, in a spiral notebook. Or you can write each goal on a 3x5 index card and reread them regularly throughout the day. The way that you use the card is you read your goal written up in big letters on that card, positive, personal, present tense. Read the card, close your eyes, and imagine the goal as a reality. Carry these cards around with you, sort of like a deck of playing cards. Whenever you have a spare moment, pull out your cards with a rubber band around them and just read the goals to yourself. Each time you read the goals, your subconscious mind photographs the command and it goes deeper into your subconscious mind. And finally, when you are writing and rewriting your goals, create the feeling within yourself that would accompany the realized goal. If you would feel proud, then imagine yourself feeling proud. If you would feel confident, liked, loved, lovable, whatever it happens to be, if you can connect the emotion with the goal, the two together have an even greater impact on your subconscious and superconscious minds, and they come faster into your life. Now, the third key to self-motivation is resolve to be the best at your job. Resolve to join the top 10%. Set it as a goal. Remember this, you'll never become a member of the top 10% unless you set it as a goal. And I talk to people, and I say, how many people here had decided to be mediocre in their careers? Nobody raises their hand. I say, well, do you know that you have an automatic default mechanism on your brain, and that if you do not decide to be excellent, you default to mediocrity? And people are shocked. They say, well, I want to be good at my job. I said, yes, but have you decided to be good? Have you written it down? Have you set it as a goal? Do you work on it every single day? Do you constantly evaluate yourself and get feedback from others so you know how well you're doing? Well, no, I don't do that, but I want to be good at what I do. It's not enough. You've got to be really crystal clear about getting into the top 10%, and you have to work at it relentlessly until you do. But here's the good news. Every step you take toward becoming better in your field raises your self-esteem and self-confidence, unlocks ideas and energy for goal attainment, motivates you and drives you forward, earns you the respect and esteem and praise of other people around you. The payoff is the journey as much as reaching the destination. So here's a question. What one skill, if you were absolutely excellent at it, would help you the most to join the top 10% in your field? What one skill? Whatever it is, write it down. Make a list of everything you could do to develop this skill and work on it every day. Work on it every day. Remember, we said the flip side of self-esteem is self-efficacy. When you commit to excellence, to becoming very good at what you do, you like yourself more and you perform better in every area. The fourth key to self-motivation is deal effectively with problems and obstacles. Remember, life is an unending series of problems like the waves coming in from the ocean. As Henry Kissinger said recently, all you get for solving problems is the authority to solve even bigger problems. Your ability to deal effectively with your problems is the key to personal power, self-esteem, and self-confidence. No matter what happens, always start off by saying, I am responsible, and take control. Then, focus on the solution rather than the problem. Think about what can be done rather than what happened. Think in positive terms of actions that you can take immediately to resolve the situation. There seems to be a direct relationship between positive, constructive action and self-confidence. So get busy working on your goals all day long. Decide today to go on a 21-day positive mental attitude diet. Remember, it takes about 21 days to develop a new habit of medium complexity. So a 21-day positive mental attitude diet is where you take complete control over your present and your future. You resolve to think and talk about what you want for 21 days. You say, okay, after 21 days, I can go back, but for the 21 days, I'm only going to think about what I want. I'm only going to think about actions I can take to achieve what I want. Meanwhile, you refuse to criticize, complain, or blame others for anything. You just refuse. You just eliminate it from your conversation. In 21 days, you will have reprogrammed yourself for life. You will have laid down what neuroscientists call a whole new series of neural tracks in your brain that cause you to easily and automatically think positively most of the time. Remember, as Goethe, the German philosopher, said, "Everything is hard before it's easy." Everything is hard before it's easy. So is it easy becoming a really positive, forward-focused, high-energy person? No. But it's learnable, and it's learnable by practice and repetition. Your new positive habits of thinking and acting will soon become automatic and easy. You'll get up in the morning, and you'll already like yourself and love your work. You'll go through the day, and you'll know, I can do it. I can do anything I put my mind to. Whenever you have problems, you say, hey, I am responsible. I'm in charge of my life. You'll become a completely positive person. You will take complete control over your mind and your emotions. Fully 85% of your success will be determined by your ability to communicate effectively with others. Almost everything you accomplish will be associated with other people in some way. People account for 85% of your happiness and your results. The quality of your communications, therefore, determines the quality of your life. It determines the quality of your relationships of all kinds. The good news is that communicating is a skill that you can learn with practice. Here are the big five of goals that you want to accomplish in your interactions with others. Number one, you want people to like and respect you, to reinforce and validate your self-image. What we find is how we think and feel about ourselves is very, very strongly affected by how other people think and feel about us and how we think other people think and feel about us. If we think that people like us and respect us, we like and respect ourselves more, we do a better job, we get better results, we get along better with others. So it's important. Number two is you want people to feel that you are valuable and important, to build your self-esteem and feelings of worthiness. Remember, our self-esteem is fragile. It's like a piece of Venetian glass, and people can raise or lower our self-esteem by the things that they do or not do, say or not say. So we want people to validate our self-esteem. We want people to feel that we're valuable. The third big goal that we have in communications is we want to be able to persuade people to your point of view, to sell your products, your services, and your ideas to others. Do you know that your ability to persuade others is really the mark of the integration of your personality? People with great personalities are persuasive. People with poor personalities are not. And if your job is in selling or business, your ability to persuade others, banks to lend you money, customers to buy your products, suppliers to give you credit, is absolutely essential for your success. Number four is you want to get people to change their minds and to cooperate with you in achieving your goals. And the fifth goal that you want to accomplish in your interactions with others is you want to be more personally powerful and effective in all your relationships in personal and business. These are also the keys to success in life, love, and leadership. Some years ago, the psychologist Daniel Goleman wrote the book Emotional Intelligence. It was a breakthrough book, bestseller. In this book, he argued that EQ, or emotional quotient, is more important than IQ, or intelligence quotient. His conclusion was that your ability to persuade others is the highest form of emotional intelligence that you can develop and the true measure of how effective you are as a person. The question is, how do you get your ideas across to others, get people to cooperate with you, and develop the abilities to communicate, influence, and persuade others? Well, understand this. Number one is people do things for their reasons, not yours. To communicate and persuade effectively, you must find out what their motives, their reasons, really are. Number two, the key is to get out of yourself and get into the mind, heart, and situation of the other person. Focus on the needs and desires of the other person rather than your own. My friend Ed Foreman used to say, if you can see Joe Jones through Joe Jones' eyes, you can sell Joe Jones what Joe Jones buys. So constantly try to see the situation through the eyes of the other person. One of the things that I used to do before going into a major sale or negotiation is I would sit down and I would write a list What are all the things that the other person wants and needs to accomplish in this negotiation? And only once I had done that would I come back and I think, now, how can I structure my offer or presentation so that it is in harmony with those needs? And every time I did this, I got fabulous results. It was without exception. Start off by thinking about the other person, and you'll be amazed at how much better a communicator you are. Now, number three way to persuade others is remember that you can only persuade and influence others if they believe that you can do something for them or to them, or if they believe that you can stop something from being done to or for them. In other words, people are pretty selfish. They look at you and they say, what can this person do to or for me? What can this person stop from being done to or for me? People are motivated by two major factors. First of all, is the desire for gain. Everybody wants more. In fact, I sometimes tell my sales audiences that for 6,000 years of recorded history, going back to the earliest markets in ancient Sumeria, customers have only bought one thing. And the one thing they buy is improvement. They buy because they feel they will be better off after buying than they were before. And your job, if you want to persuade them, is to persuade them that they will be better off by cooperating with you than they would be without it. Their desire for gain is for physical gain, material gain, financial gain, emotional gain, pride, security, peace of mind, riches, value, growth, profits. In other words, everybody wants these things. The second motivation is the fear of loss. And this can also be fear of physical loss, physical danger, insecurity, material loss, financial loss, emotional loss, loss of love, affection, respect, and so on. And those two compete back and forth in the mind of each person you speak to. But here's a rule. The fear of loss is 2.5 times more powerful than the desire for gain in motivating human behavior. So what I say is, if you're going to present a product or a service or a proposition, say, this is how you will benefit if you do it, but this is the detriment, or this is what you will lose if you don't. So you trigger both motivations, desire for gain and fear of loss. Now, everything is perception. How people perceive you as being able to help them or hurt them in some way largely determines by how they react to you. You could be talking to someone and you could have the feeling that this person can do nothing to help you or hurt you at all. They're irrelevant. And then someone comes along and says, oh, by the way, have you met this person? This person is potentially a $1 million customer for your product, and he's in the market right now and is in a hurry to make a purchase. Suddenly, your entire perception of this person transforms when you realize that this person has great potential value for you. All of human behavior is based on what I call the expediency factor, the factor of expediency in human behavior. And the expediency factor says that people always strive to get the things they want the fastest and easiest way possible with little immediate concern for the long-term consequences of their actions. In other words, people are lazy, greedy, and impatient. They want what they want, and they want it now. Sometimes they want it yesterday, and they don't really care about the long-term ramifications. One of the hardest of all things for parents to develop in their children is what we call long-time perspective, is thinking long-term about the things that they're doing in the present. People say, oh, I want a piece of cheesecake, and they don't think about how long it will take to work that piece of cheesecake off if they have to exercise. So the great motivating factor is people seek fast, easy, quick, and patient ways to get what they want. Your job is to make your idea or proposal appear to be the most expedient way for the other person to achieve their personal and business goals. If you cannot show the person that the fastest and easiest way to get what they want is to do what you want them to do, then you can't possibly expect them to accept your recommendation. Now, there are four keys to persuasion that you can develop and use. We call these the four P's. The first is called personal power. The more people see you as having power over people, money, or resources, the more open they are to being persuaded by you. You can imagine if Donald Trump walked in the room and walked up to you and demanded that you do something, you'd be much more influenced by it than if the waiter came up and asked you the same thing, because we perceive his personal power over people, money, and resources. Now, the second key to persuasion is positioning. How people think and talk about you, your reputation among the people you are trying to persuade. When you have a tremendous reputation for being competent, for being a good person, for being honest, for being wealthy, or for being an expert in your field, you have a greater influence over other people. The third area of persuasion is performance. Your ability and competence in your field, having a reputation for expertise and knowledge, enables you to persuade other people to your point of view far easier than if they didn't feel that you knew any more than they did. And number four is politeness, the use of kindness, courtesy, and respect in all your dealings with other people. You see, the deepest need that each person has is for a feeling of importance and value. When you satisfy this deep craving that people have to feel important and valuable, they become much more open to your persuasion and to your efforts to communicate. The most powerful influence factor in psychology is liking. The more people like you, the more open they are to being persuaded and influenced by you. This is the key to effective communication. As we said before, the simplest of all communication tools is to make people feel important. And there are five ways to make people feel important. We call them the five A's. The first A is acceptance. The practice of acceptance satisfies a deep subconscious need. Each person needs to feel that he or she is accepted by others around them. He or she is accepted in their work environment, accepted in their home environment, accepted by people they meet. And they look for it and they watch for it. They say whenever two people meet, the first thing that is established is a level of acceptance of some kind. And the way that you express acceptance of another people is simple. You simply smile. You act as if you're happy to see them. When I go into my office, sometimes after being away for a week or 2 weeks, the very first thing I do is I go from person to person, like a hummingbird going from flower to flower, and I just smile at each person and say, "How are you? It's nice to see you. It's nice to be back." And I just go from person to person to person and acknowledge them and tell them that they're important parts of our company. And you can do the same thing. By the way, each time you re-meet a member of your family, your spouse or your child, smile. Wow, it's you, as though you're happy to see them again. This has an enormously positive impact on how important they feel and how open they are to being influenced by you. The second A is appreciation. Now, how do you express appreciation? It's very simple. Just say, "Thank you," for everything that people do for you, large and small. Just say thank you all the time. When a waiter brings you a glass of water, say thank you. When somebody steps aside for you, say thank you. When somebody types a letter for you or brings you in to see a customer, say thank you. The more you say thank you, the more you cause that other person's self-esteem to go up. They feel more valuable and important. They like themselves better. They beam, and they like you better as well. You cannot say thank you too often. I've traveled in many countries all over the world, and a friend of mine wrote to me and said he was traveling out to the Far East, and he wondered if I could give him some advice on how to get along well. And I said, "Yes, I will give you the advice." I say, when you travel out to the Far East, remember everybody you're dealing with earns less, and usually far less than you could ever imagine. So they don't have anything going for them except their own personal value. And if you'll acknowledge that, you'll have a great trip. And the way you do that is you learn how to say please and thank you in each language. And whenever you meet people, smile and say please and thank you. And whatever they do for you, express gratitude, and you'll have a wonderful trip. He wrote back to me 2 months later. He said, "It's the best advice he ever got in his whole life." He could not believe it. Everywhere he went, whether they were standoffish or reserved, when he said please and thank you and smiled at them, he said he got everything he wanted. He got upgraded to better rooms. He got better tables in restaurants. I mean, he just got wonderful things by just making other people feel important. Now, the third A is admiration. With admiration means that you express sincere compliments on the traits, accomplishments, and possessions of other people. Remember, everybody likes a compliment. Compliments make people feel valuable and important. People put a lot of emotional investment into the different factors of their life. So if a person is punctual, say, "You know, you're the most punctual person in this whole company." If a person is persistent, say, "Boy, you're sure persistent. You never give up." People are very proud of their traits of character because it's taken them a long time to develop them. If a person has accomplished something, graduated from a college, completed a degree, gotten a certification, and you admire that, say, "Wow, that's really great. You must be really proud of that. That must have taken a lot of work." people who've put a lot of hours into getting that feel just really happy about themselves. And finally, possessions. There's two types of possessions. There's, of course, a person's car, a person's home, person's furniture, person's desk, office, but also a person's clothing. When you compliment a person on their hair, on their clothing, a man on his shirt, a woman on her dress, a man on his shoes, a woman on her handbag, or the way her hair is done, when you admire that and express a compliment, people just beam. They feel valuable. Their self-esteem goes up. They like themselves more, and they feel happier being in your presence. And all it takes is just a couple of seconds for you to acknowledge and point out something that's worth a compliment. Number four is approval. And the way you express approval is you give praise for both small and large accomplishments. Now, here's a discovery. In psychology, they say that self-esteem is the degree to which a person feels praiseworthy or worthy of praise. When you praise a person for doing a good job, praise a person for a result, praise a person for anything that they've put effort into, their self-esteem surges. It just jumps up and they feel really happy about themselves. So the key point is be specific with your praise and be immediate. If a secretary types a letter for you, don't say, "You're a great secretary." Say, "That is a really excellent letter." And tell her immediately after it is typed. Give an immediate compliment because the closer the compliment follows after the event, the more likely it is the person will follow up and repeat that behavior. We find that praise that is delayed or deferred has very little effect on the emotions or behavior of another person. If you wait for a week or a month to praise the person, it's too late. They'll have forgotten all about the incidents and they'll just kind of roll their eyes. So praise immediately. I phone people, I email people, I text mail people to praise them when I hear that they've done something good. And fun number five is attention, which is listening to people when they talk. This is so powerful. When you listen to people when they talk, they feel so good about themselves. They feel so valuable and important that they open up like a flower to be influenced and persuaded by you. Each one of these behaviors raises the self-esteem of the other person. It makes them more open to your ideas and more desirous of helping you achieve your goals. Now, in all of this, effective listening is the key to leadership, to persuasion, and to good communications. It is so powerful that it's often called white magic. There are four keys to being a great listener. Number one, listen attentively. Lean forward. Don't interrupt. When you listen attentively, you raise the other person's self-esteem and make them feel important. When you listen attentively to another person, they feel happy and valuable about themselves. They feel important. When another person is listened to attentively, their brain releases endorphins, which makes them feel happy about being in your presence. So effective listening with no attempt to interrupt is very powerful. When you listen to another person, imagine that your eyes are sun lamps and you want to give the other person's face a tan. And the more intensely you listen, the more powerful are the sun lamps of your eyes and the better is the tan that you give. And also, you want to give the face of the other person an overall tan. So you keep flicking up and down. You look at the person's mouth and their eyes, and you nod and you smile, as though you want to give an overall tan to the person's face. This has an inordinate impact on causing them to feel good about themselves and on liking you. Now, number two is pause before replying. In other words, when a person stops to take a breath, don't jump in with your 2 cents worth. Pause and allow silence in the conversation. This benefits you in 3 ways. First of all, you avoid the risk of interrupting if the person is just reorganizing their thoughts. Second, though, it allows you to hear at a deeper level. When you pause and listen, you actually hear and understand what the person is saying far better than if you just jumped in. The third benefit is that pausing tells the person that you consider his or her words to be important, which means by extension you consider him or her to be important as well. When you pause, you get a threefer. You get 3 powerful benefits. Now, the third key to listening is to question for clarification. Never assume that you know what the other person meant by what he or she said. Instead, if there's any question at all, you say, "How do you mean? How do you mean exactly?" Whenever you ask the question, "How do you mean?" the other person will expand on what they just said. And then you pause and you say, well, how do you mean? And then they'll expand again. And sometimes you can go through an entire conversation by just repeating, how do you mean? Another question you can ask when a person is explaining something to you is, and then what did you do? And then what did you do? Like they're telling something that happened and they pause to see if you're really interested. You say, and then what did you do? And listen attentively to the answers. And the third thing you can say is when a person says or explains something, say, how did you feel about that? You see, people will always answer a feeling question. When you say, how do you feel today? People always give you an answer. How do you feel about that deal? How do you feel about your new neighborhood? People will always answer a feeling question, which gives you a chance to nod and listen. And remember, the person who asks questions has control over the person who is answering the questions. The more questions you ask, the more control you have in the conversation. And the fourth key to listening is to feed it back and paraphrase it in your own words. This is the acid test of listening. At the end of the person speaking, you say, well, let me make sure I understand what you're saying. Or, so what you're saying is this, and you rephrase it until they say, yes, that's it. That's my concern. That's what I was saying. That proves to them that you were truly listening. You weren't like one of those little dogs in the back of the car with the head bobbing. You were genuinely listening to what they said. It's the proof to the other person that you care about them and what they say. The most important word in persuasion, influence, and communicating with power is credibility. Here's a question. How much does the person like you, trust you, and believe in what you say? And it's determined by your credibility. And the rule with regard to credibility is that everything counts. Everything helps or hurts. Everything adds up or takes away from your credibility. Nothing is overlooked or ignored. The key to being trusted is to be trustworthy. Keep your promises. Do what you say you will do. Be punctual for every meeting. Concentrate on developing a reputation for honesty and dependability. People will buy more and pay more from a company that is reliable than one that offers a better, cheaper product or service, but is not reliable. To communicate effectively with others, you must look the part as well. Remember, people are 95% visual in their thinking about you. They think about you in pictures. It only takes 4 seconds to make the first impression. When you meet a person the first time, they take one glance at you, like a snapshot, blink, and they've made their first impression of you. It takes only 30 seconds to finalize the person's impression of you. In other words, once they've made their first impression, they begin watching and their mind begins to set like fast-drying concrete. And if you do not change the first impression, within the next 30 seconds, the mind will set, and after the first impression is solidified, the person seeks reasons to justify and validate the impression they've already made. This is called selective perception. They selectively perceive information and they simultaneously reject all contradictory information. They look for information to validate what they've already decided. So, dress for success. Your clothes are 95% of your first impression or communication to others because even on a hot day, your clothes cover 95% of your body. When I was growing up, I was a young salesman. I went and I bought a cheap suit from a cheap place that fitted me poorly, got a suit and I got a tie and I put them all together. And I had not come from a family where anybody ever wore a tie, so I didn't know anything about it. And I made some sales, and one day, an older salesman took me aside and said, could I give you a little feedback on your dress? And he was very tentative about it because most people are really sensitive about their dress and grooming. And I said, absolutely. Do you see anything I could improve? And he said, yes, let me tell you a little bit about proper dress and business. I still remember he began talking about the way a suit hangs, the way it's cut, the seams, how the tie goes with the suit and with the shirt, the length of the trousers, the color of socks and shoes. I couldn't believe that there was so much to it. And he then introduced me to a tailor, not an expensive one, who actually made me a tailored suit. And the difference between a suit that fit me and a suit that I'd bought off the rack was almost miraculous. After that, I went out and I bought book after book after book on how to dress properly. And I got advice from the very best people on the subject. And now when I do a seminar, people will come up to me and say, you know, I'm an image consultant. I charge $500 or $1,000 a day to advise people on proper dress. And you are dressed impeccably. I hear that over and over again. Of course, I beam when I hear it. But the point is that it makes a tremendous impression for you to have your plumage in such a way that it impresses other people, that it has a positive effect. So get and read books and articles on how to dress successfully in whatever business or occupation you are in. There are some clothes and some colors and some combinations that immediately cause people to stand up and salute and take you seriously. There are other combinations that cause people to downgrade you and greet you and look upon you with suspicion. Look at the most successful and respected people around you. Make them your role models. Copy their ways of dress and grooming. Because I want to be successful in business, I would read the business magazines. I would also read the appointment pages in the newspapers, where they show photographs of people who've just been appointed to more senior positions, and you'd look at the way they're dressed. And in every case, they look great. Male and female, they look great. You always dress for the job that you want in the future. You always dress so that your boss would be proud to introduce you to one of your customers or somebody coming into your company. You always dress ahead of where you are in life. When you look at people that you really admire, make them your role models. Copy their ways of dress. Copy their ways of grooming. Remember, birds of a feather flock together. People promote people who look like them. If you're going to sell something to someone, you're giving them advice. So dress the way the people who give them advice would dress. Their bankers, their lawyers, their accountants, and so on. Preparation is a powerful way to communicate and build credibility. Before every meeting, do your homework. People know immediately when you are well prepared for a meeting. Your credibility goes straight up. When you walk in and you say, thank you very much for your time, I took a little bit of time to go onto the internet and look at your site. I was quite amazed to see that you've been in business for 12 years. You have 127 people and you're the top distributor of this particular product or service in this market area. I mean, how did you accomplish that? Your credibility just goes straight through the roof. What? You've done some research. You've checked us out. You've learned something about us before you came here. Whew, it's one of the most powerful things you can do in selling and persuasion. People also know immediately when you're unprepared for a meeting. When you come in and you say, well, what do you do here anyway? Or how long have you been in business? Or what does this company do? Which is what I used to say when I was younger. Your credibility goes straight through the floor. By the way, the rule with regard to preparation is this, is you should never ask a question of a person in a company or organization, the answer to which is readily available somewhere else. Dale Carnegie used to say that you have to earn the right to call on a customer. You earn the right by doing your homework before you get there. To influence people in business, always refer back to the expediency principle. In business especially, people buy or decline to buy based on their conclusion that your offering is the fastest and best way to get what they want right now or not. Liking is the most important factor in communicating effectively in business. The more they like you, the more open they are to buying from you. Credibility and trust are the most powerful reasons for being persuaded by another person. Always think of how you could be more credible and more trustworthy. Someone once said that the most important ability in business is dependability. And I think that's a good point. Social proof is the key to influencing people. Refer to others who have accepted your idea or product and who are happy with it. Use letters, lists, names, and photographs. People are inordinately influenced in making a decision by what are called similar others, people like them. So when you call on a doctor, you say, many other doctors are now using this with great results. That immediately raises your credibility and opens the doctor to learning more about your offering. If you're talking to a truck driver, you say a lot of truck drivers are now using this for this reason. If you're talking to a real estate agent, you say top real estate agents use this all the time. In other words, whenever you're talking to somebody, refer to someone else in their field that's also using your product. Use letters from these people. Use lists of names from people in similar fields. And use photographs of people using your product or service in a similar field to the person you're talking to. You build buying desire by focusing on the benefits and by continually asking the question, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? This is the one question that you have to answer over and over again. Always explain the different ways that the person will be better off using your product or service. Always show how their life or work will improve when they accept your advice. Now, there are several differences between men and women in communicating, persuading, and influencing. Now, there are exceptions in every case, but basically, men are direct and women are indirect. Men are like a javelin and women are like a boxer that circles. They come around the subject. Men want a recommendation. Women prefer to choose from a selection of available items. We say that in buying, if you're talking to a man, you say, here are the three options, and what I recommend for you, based on what you've said, is this, because of these reasons. With a woman, you say, here are the three options, here are the pros and cons, which do you prefer? Women like to choose, men like a recommendation. Now, another factor in communications differences between men and women is that men use words as tools to do a job, and they use as few tools as they need to. Women use words to connect, to nurture, and to build relationships. Men like to make quick, practical decisions. Women prefer to listen to their emotions and take more time in making a decision. Men are motivated by success, by status, by power, by results and achievement. Women are more concerned with family, children, friends, and relationships. Men like to talk about sports, business, and politics. Women prefer to talk about people, relationships, and emotions. It's really interesting. If you ever go to a social function and you have two or three couples there, you'll find that the men cluster and begin to talk about sports, business, and politics. The women cluster and begin to talk about people, family, relationships, emotions, and so on. It's automatic. Whenever I go out for dinner with, let's say, three couples, I always put the three women together and the three men together. And they say, well, what about boy, girl, boy, girl? I say, yeah, but you spend lots of time with the other person. Let's put the women together because the women will instantly start talking about things that are of interest to women, and the men will immediately start talking about things that are of interest to men, and both groups will have a great time and say, this was a great dinner. Another interesting point, men can only focus on one thing, one sense at a time. Women can both talk and listen, interact, and do other things simultaneously. So to get along better with women, men need to ask more questions, listen more attentively, and offer fewer suggestions or solutions. Interesting, when a woman brings a problem to a man, she said, I have this problem at work or with a person, and this is what has happened, and what do you think? Well, she's already decided what she's going to do, because women are much better in relationships than men are. The only reason she's asking is to start a conversation, because women like to talk to the men in their life. And so they use this as an opportunity to start the engine and get the conversation going. But the last thing they want is a solution. And what men do is they say, oh, well, why don't you do this, do that? And then they go back to watching television. No, that's not what she wanted. She wants to talk. Oh, how did it happen? And what do you think you should do? One of the things I've learned with women, by the way, if they ask you one of these either-or questions, always say, well, what do you think is best? What should I wear, these earrings or these earrings? Which do you think goes best with that dress? Which do I wear, these shoes or those shoes? Well, which do you like better? You see, they've pretty much decided what they're going to wear. So throw it back on them. Because other than that, you'll say, well, I like the brown ones. She said, well, I think I'll wear the beige ones. Well, I like these earrings. Well, I think I'll wear those. In other words, she's already decided what she's going to do. She just wants to talk. She just wants to converse. So it's very important that you just ask questions, ask for her opinion, rather than offering suggestions and solutions. Now, to get along better with men, women need to be more direct, to be clear about what they want, and to ask for help or involvement. Remember, men cannot read minds, but women can. Every man has had an experience where he'll call home and he'll say, hello, and she'll say, what's wrong? One word, is it your boss? Is it what happened this morning? She'll put it all together with hello. Remember the movie Jerry Maguire? The famous line in the movie, after everything has happened, and Jerry Maguire, played by Tom Cruise, walks in, opens the door, and he says, hello. And then he starts talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. And she says, you had me at hello. because she knew everything just from hello. And women are like that. A problem, by the way, that arises with men and women is that when women interact with other women, women can read each other's minds and know what they're thinking and feeling, and they're very sensitive to it, and they respond appropriately. Women expect men to be the same way. And if men aren't, because we're not constructed that way, women sometimes become resentful. And they say, well, why not? It's because he's not trying. No, it's because he's not capable of it. It's very important to understand. Men do not think a lot about relationships or communications. Women think a lot about relationships and communications. It's a major fundamental difference between the two. Men have very simple inner lives, and women have very complex inner lives. If you take a man and a woman sitting on a couch watching television, the man's brain will shut down to about 20% of capacity, almost like an office building full of lights, and 80% of the lights go out, and there's just about 20% of the lights left on. A woman, if you put an ECG on her head, same thing, watching television, 80% of her brain will be fully activated. It'll be going off and on, and she'll be thinking about what she's watching and what he said, what she said, the plot, how it's developing, what she did earlier in the day, what she's going to do tomorrow, and so on. Jerry Seinfeld was once asked, what do men think about? And his answer was, not much. They just sit there. They don't think about much. So a woman comes along and says, well, what are you thinking? And he thinks he's got to say something. So he thinks up something, but he wasn't thinking anything at all. And the worst of all, when women come to say to a man, well, what are you feeling? What are you feeling about this? Or how do you feel? Man's not feeling anything. He's just sitting there. So it's really important that men and women understand that there's fundamental differences in the way they communicate. Resolve today to become an expert in communicating with power. Read books on the subject. Attend courses on effective communications. Listen to the audio programs. And most of all, practice, practice, practice.